Stay tuned for Africa News Tonight, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Bob Doty reporting. U.S. Saudi Arabia seek pause. U.S. and Saudi officials have agreed to pursue a humanitarian pause in Yemen, where fighting by Shiite Houthi rebels has forced thousands of people to flee the country. At a news conference in Riyadh Thursday, Secretary of State John Kerry and his Saudi counterpart, Foreign Minister Adel Al-Jubeir, said efforts were underway to forge a five-day ceasefire in Yemen to send in humanitarian aid. They said the ceasefire would be renewable, depending on the conditions on the ground. The Saudi foreign minister said there had been no initial contact with the Houthis, who are believed to receive support from Iran, on whether they would support a ceasefire. British voters are going to the polls in a very close election that could make a Scottish party the power broker and oust Prime Minister David Cameron. VOA's Al Pessin reports from London.
Public opinion polls indicate Prime Minister Cameron's Conservative Party will fall well short of a parliamentary majority, even with his current coalition partner, the Liberal Democrats. The Labour Party, under Ed Miliband, is expected to get about the same number of seats as the Conservatives, but experts say Miliband will have an easier time finding partners for a new governing coalition. Professor Tony Travers of the London School of Economics spoke to VOA affiliate Al Hurra Television.
There is most likely to be a hung parliament, and if that is the case, at the moment it looks slightly easier for the Labour Party to form a minority government than the Conservatives.
The election is so close that it will likely be well into the wee hours of Friday before the results are known. Al Pessin, VOA News, London.
This is VOA News. More violence rocked the streets of Burundi's capital Thursday as the top African Union officials said the country is too volatile to hold elections scheduled for next month. Burundi has seen almost daily violent protests since President Pierre Nkurunziza announced last month that he will run for a third term, something his opponents say is unconstitutional. At least 13 people have died since the demonstrations began April 26th. President vowed Wednesday if he is reelected, it will be his last term. He also called for an end to the protests, saying it is important the elections be held in a peaceful atmosphere. A U.S. appeals court has ruled that the clandestine National Security Agency's massive domestic data collection program is illegal. VOA's Michael Bowman reports the ruling has provoked mixed reaction among lawmakers who face an end-of-month deadline to extend or terminate the controversial program.
A three-judge federal panel in New York wrote that, quote, Congress cannot reasonably be said to have ratified a program of which many members of Congress and all members of the public were not aware. At issue is the NSA's collection of what the spy agency calls metadata, millions of records of phone calls, including the numbers dialed but not the content of the calls. In the halls of Congress, Democratic Senator Richard Blumenthal welcomed the court decision.
This appellate court ruling is really a historic breakthrough because it shows that the FISA court got it wrong and will continue to get it wrong unless it is fundamentally reformed.
Michael Bowman, VOA News, the Capitol.
Chinese officials in the southwestern city of Chengdu have visited the offices of Uber as part of what appears to be a widening investigation into the mobile taxi hailing service. Spokeswoman with Chengdu's Transportation Commission says officials conducted interviews and gathered information during the Wednesday visit. She provided no other details. Last week, police raided Uber offices in the southern city of Guangzhou. State media reported that officials there were investigating whether the company was properly licensed. Nearly three dozen homes were destroyed Wednesday after a series of tornadoes struck the midwestern U.S. states of Oklahoma, Kansas, and Nebraska. The damage mainly occurred in Oklahoma, especially on the outskirts of the capital, Oklahoma City. Officials say at least 35 homes were destroyed by a tornado that hit southwest of Oklahoma City Wednesday afternoon. A second tornado struck late Wednesday night, turning over several vehicles on a major roadway. So far, there have been no reports of injuries or any fatalities. I'm Bob Doty in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. Coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight.
We strongly urge the Houthis and those who back them, whom we suggest use all of their influence, not to miss this major opportunity to address the needs of the Yemeni people and find a peaceful way forward in Yemen.
That's UN Secretary of State John Kerry in Saudi Arabia. Details coming up. Also in the news, fresh political violence in Burundi has left 3 people dead and at least 13 others wounded as demonstrations continue against President Pierre Nkurunziza's decision to run for a third term. We'll have these stories, plus the sunny side of sports with Sunny Young, music from DRC, and our daily features. So stay with us. There's lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story this hour, U.S. and Saudi officials have agreed to pursue a humanitarian pause in Yemen, where fighting by Shiite Houthi rebels has forced thousands of people to flee the country. At a news conference in Riyadh today, Secretary of State John Kerry and his Saudi counterpart, Foreign Minister Adel Al-Jubur, said efforts were underway to forge a 5-day ceasefire in Yemen to send in humanitarian aid. They said the ceasefire would be renewable depending on the conditions on the ground. The Saudi foreign minister said there had been no initial contact with the Houthis, who are believed to receive support from Iran on whether they would support a ceasefire. But Secretary of State Kerry expressed his support for the plan.
We strongly urge the Houthis and those who back them, whom we suggest use all of their influence, not to miss this major opportunity to address the needs of the Yemeni people and find a peaceful way forward in Yemen. A ceasefire has been a long-standing goal of the international community, and we deeply respect the leadership in Saudi Arabia for stepping up, taking on this initiative, and saying to the world they're prepared to meet the humanitarian needs of the people of Yemen. We will have several days between today's announcement and the actual start of the ceasefire in order to allow time for the international community to prepare the food, the medicine, and the other supplies for distribution so that it can be done in an orderly and efficient process once the ceasefire does take effect, if the Houthi accept the conditions. And that will also give us time to do the diplomacy necessary to try to encourage this process to be able to take hold. In my meeting today with President Hadi, I emphasized the need to also support the UN-brokered all-party negotiations, and I urge everyone, especially the Houthis, to cooperate with the UN's new special envoy, Ismail Old Sheikh Ahmed. This is a time for effective diplomacy and for potential solutions.
Meanwhile, United Nations Special Envoy to Yemen, Ismail Old Sheikh Ahmed, has traveled to Riyadh for meetings with President Hadi and other Yemeni officials. He's been conducting intensive consultations to restore Yemen's political process. Earlier today, Kerry met separately with Saudi King Salman and Yemen's exiled President Abdu Rabu Mansur Hadi, who fled to Saudi Arabia for his own safety. President Hadi has denounced what he called a coup by Houthi rebels who occupied Sana'a last year and later placed him under house arrest. In February, Mr. Hadi fled to the southern port of Aden and then to Saudi Arabia. A Saudi-led air coalition has been pounding targets in the Houthis, of the Houthis who are believed to receive support from Iran. After Kerry wraps up his visit to Saudi Arabia, he travels to Paris. There, he will meet with Gulf Cooperation Council members to discuss security and regional cooperation.
Music.
Dozens of Nigerian refugees are reported to have died of starvation and dehydration after being expelled from neighboring Niger Lake Chad area. They were ordered out by Nigerian troops fighting Boko Haram in Niger's vast network of marshlands. Niger began a mass evacuation of the marshlands a week after Boko Haram attacked a Niger military base on the Karamaga Island, killing at least 74 Niger soldiers. The UN official for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs says about 25,000 Nigerians have fled the region and reached the towns of Ngugima and Bosso in southeastern Niger. UN officials say most are in need of shelter, food and water. Another 5,000 fishermen and other Nigerians who had earlier fled Boko Haram attacks in Nigeria are being hastily forced to return home without having time to gather supplies. Many have walked for 3 days to reach safety. Others were met at the border by Nigerian trucks. Yesterday, Nigeria's National Emergency Management Agency reported about 6,000 Nigerian refugees are being registered in the Gaidam, a town in Nigeria's Borno State. The agency's Air Commodore, Charles Otegeba, says Niger plans to conduct military operations in Lake Chad area. He says Niger offered housing in camps for the internally displaced, but the Nigerians wanted to return to their own homes. Regional forces have had recent success in pushing Boko Haram forces out of many towns in northeastern Nigeria. The insurgents have displaced more than 1.5 million Nigerians and killed thousands in a six-year war to create an independent caliphate. Niger is hosting more than 100,000 other Nigerian refugees who fled Boko Haram. They are allowed to remain in camps for the displaced that are outside the Lake Chad area. After their rescue from a Boko Haram stronghold in northeast Nigeria, nearly 300 women and girls and children are starting the long road back to normality. Christine reports from Malkoi, Nigeria.
What was once a place of learning is now a place of refuge for these 275 women and children. They were rescued by the Nigerian military from the Sambisa Forest, one of the last strongholds of the Nigerian extremist group Boko Haram. They now live in what was once a school in the village of Malkohi, outside Yola, the capital of the northeastern state of Adamawa. With their families torn apart and their livelihoods destroyed, they face a difficult road as they try to rebuild their lives. Magdalene Matthew was kidnapped by Boko Haram last December. She says the fighters took her from town to town, often without food or water. At one point, a military plane bombed her group, killing some of the captives. Eventually, Boko Haram took her to Sambisa Forest.
We were there for a very long time, and Boko Haram was forcing us to get married and to convert to Islam, and we refused. In the process, God sent a helper, which was the Nigerian military, and they rescued them and took them out of Sambisa.
Authorities say some of the 275 people who arrived at this camp suffered from malnutrition and even gunshot wounds. The sick and injured are getting treatment. The next step is dealing with the trauma many here are suffering from their time in Boko Haram captivity. Counselors fan out to speak with the former captives. Their goal is to make them aware of the mental toll their weeks and months in captivity may have taken. Henry Abuse is one of the counselors.
They are now sleeping in a place where they are not used to. They are eating the type of food that they have not been used to. And some, they cannot even know where their parents are. Some of the children cannot even know where their brothers and sisters are.
In its six-year fight to impose strict Sharia law in northeastern Nigeria, Boko Haram has rampaged through villages, including some in northern Adamawa State. They've displaced more than a million people, tens of thousands of whom went to the area around Yola. Haruna Hammam is the permanent secretary of Adamawa State's Emergency Management Agency. He says he expects more rescued people to arrive at the camp.
They said we should expect more, depending on the availability of space with us. So we hope that they continue to rescue, and we also are willing to receive as they bring.
There may be more arrivals yet. Nigeria's military said Wednesday it had rescued another 25 women and children from the Sambisa forest. Chris Stein for VOA News, Malkohi, Nigeria.
Fresh political violence in Burundi has left 3 people dead and at least 13 others wounded as demonstrations continue against President Pierre Nkurunziza's decision to run for a 3rd term. Demonstrators say supporters of the government, with the help of police, have been attacking them, allegations that police and the ruling party deny. VOA's Mohamed Yusuf has the story.
Witnesses and a Red Cross official say the latest unrest occurred Thursday after police intervened to stop clashes between the president's supporters and opponents in the capital, Bujumbura. In the neighborhood of Sibutoke, protesters clashed with police officers. Demonstrators say supporters of the president threw a grenade at them, killing their colleagues and injuring others. Olivier, who only gave his first name, says he witnessed the attack. They threw 3 grenades in Sibitoke, First Avenue near the mosque, he says. In the other place where they threw the 2 grenades, they shot 1 person in the head. And there are those who were injured and were taken to the hospital. Burundi's Red Cross says the grenade attack killed 2 people and injured 3. Red Cross spokesman Alex Manirakazi says the other person killed Thursday was burned to death. VOA's Central Africa Service reports the man was believed to be a member of the ruling party's youth wing and was attacked by opposition supporters in the Nyakibiga area in central Bujumbura. Manirakiza says the Red Cross has recorded more than 210 people wounded since the protest began last month. He says the organization is coping so far, but has reached out to other groups for help in dealing with the situation.
We are in contact with Caritas Burundi, Handicap International, and Doctors Without Borders. With Doctors Without Borders, they promised us to avail more ambulances, and we get in close contact through different communication channels so that if we come across a case that is beyond our capacities, we call upon them, and they have already started doing that.
Bujumbura has seen protests almost every day since the president announced his plans last month to run for a 3rd term. Demonstrators say Mr. Nkurunziza is violating a 2-term limit in the constitution, but Burundi's constitutional court ruled he could run because he was elected by parliament, not voters, for his first term in 2005. Nkurunziza vowed in a speech Wednesday that if he is re-elected, it will be his last term. He also called for an end to the protest, saying it is important the June 26 elections be held in a peaceful atmosphere. Human rights groups say the government and its supporters are using violence and intimidation against the protesters and opposition. On Wednesday, security forces arrested one of the presidential candidates accused of organizing protests. Independent presidential candidate Agathon Rwasa says he's also a target for his political stand.
I got the tip from somebody in the police, an officer of the police, told me, "See, guy, take care. There are men there who are coming to hunt you. They could harm me." And it is something which is really hard to understand. If Nkurunziza pretend to be strong, why then is he seeking to annihilate his opponent? Why? It's a proof that really he's only strong for violence, not strong for democracy.
Rwasa's wife was attacked and injured last month by armed gunmen in Bujumbura. President Nkurunziza is expected to officially present his candidacy papers to the Electoral Commission this Saturday. Mohamed Yusuf, VOA News, Bujumbura.
You were listening to African News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington. 20 past the hour. Here's a recap of our top stories. Secretary of State John Kerry and his Saudi counterpart said efforts were underway to forge a five-day ceasefire in Yemen to send humanitarian aid. And dozens of Nigerian refugees are reported to have died of starvation and dehydration after being expelled from neighboring Niger, Lake Chad area. And would like to hear your thoughts on our stories. You can write to us at African News Tonight, Voice of America, 330 Independence Avenue, Southwest Washington, D.C., 20237. The UN Security Council may consider a resolution to seize smugglers' vessels on the Mediterranean early next week. The draft resolution authorizes taking vessels where there is clear evidence the boats are being used for human trafficking to Europe. Italian Foreign Minister Federia Moreni is due to brief the Council on the smuggling crisis on Monday. The resolution would permit a one-year European Union mission to confiscate vessels on the high seas, in Libyan waters, and on the Libyan coastline, where most of the smuggling originates. The resolution currently includes the power to destroy boats, but Russia indicated it would veto such a proposal. UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon is expected to push the EU to create a robust humanitarian solution to the migrant crisis. More than 500 children die in traffic accidents each day and tens of thousands are injured, according to officials from the UN-sponsored Global Road Safety Week. Events are being held around the globe this week to focus on delivering the UN's Child Declaration, a document drafted by children and sent to policymakers who could make a difference. The nonprofit Save Kids Worldwide has been working to prevent childhood deaths and injury that take place from road accidents. Kate Carr is CEO of Save Kids Worldwide. She spoke about what needs to be done to improve road safety for children around the world.
More than 500 children are killed every single day around the world as a result of a road traffic crash. And that's an alarming statistic. And it really puts road crashes as a leading cause of death for children around the world.
And it's really good that you are bringing attention to this issue on a global scale. And I know that in the United States it's a very, very big issue. But for developing nations, it's really an even bigger problem.
Well, children living in poorer nations in the low and middle income countries are most at risk. We know that 95% of the global fatalities occur among children in low and middle income countries. Now, part of the reason for that is a lack of the laws that we here in the United States might take for granted concerning speeding, drinking and driving, the use of car seats or even seatbelts, along with road infrastructure and the design of vehicles that are on the highway, including motorcycles, and a lack of helmet laws. So there are a number of factors that contribute to fatalities for children who are both in vehicles and pedestrians.
What are some of the things that you all are doing right now to bring this alarming statistic of child fatalities on the road to a worldwide stage?
The United Nations has declared May 4th through May 10th Global Road Safety Week, and the focus of this particular week is on the needs of children. Save Kids is supporting a campaign called Save Kids Lives, and that's the official campaign for the third UN Global Road Safety Week. The campaign is calling on action from policymakers to improve laws and improve roads and improve vehicles so that we can keep kids safer.
How can a developing country with little to no resources be able to bring this issue to the forefront?
Well, bringing awareness to it, we've seen very simple solutions. Think about the ability of children who are walking to school, an act that every child hopefully is doing in the course of their young lives. We have to make sure that those children can be seen and that they can see oncoming vehicles, and that if they're crossing a highway or a road, that there is a safe crossing place. So whether it's a traffic signal or zebra stripes painted on the road, making sure the kids don't have to dart between speeding vehicles to get from one side of the street to the other to get to their school, that can be a very simple solution. You can think of zebra stripes, you can think of crossing guards. These are low-income solutions, along with controlling the speed in the school zones.
What are some countries that have the highest fatalities for children?
There are definitely regional variations, and we look at regions as opposed to country by country because the data on road crashes by country, particularly in low and middle income countries, is very sparse. So in Africa, Africa has the highest rate of fatalities in the low income countries, with a death rate of 15.6 per 100,000 people, population. If you compare that to Europe, Europe has one of the lowest rates for low middle income countries with a fatality rate of 5.6. Now, that gets even lower when we look at some countries that have a fatality rate of 2.9 in high income countries. So the variation per population is quite dramatic. And while that's given as a rate of fatalities, if you look at the total number of estimated deaths, 500 per day, close to 200,000 children per year, we're really approaching the rates that we see from infectious diseases. And in fact, for kids between the ages of 15 and 19, road crashes are the leading cause of death.
I understand also that a document has been drafted by children called the UN's Child Declaration. Can you tell us about that?
The Child Declaration is being signed by kids around the world. It's being highlighted in schools around the world, and we are looking to collect over 100,000 signatures so that these declarations can be delivered to policymakers at the highest levels, at the UN, at the World Health Organization, to presidents of nations, to local policymakers. We all have a stake in improving road safety, no matter where we live, but most particularly in low and middle income countries.
Kate Carr is CEO of Safe Kids Worldwide. She spoke with VOA's Kim Lewis from Washington, D.C. This is Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. It's 29 minutes past the hour on The Voice of America.
Looking for something special when maybe they should just listen instead? The VOA's African Music Mix will soothe your nerves and calm your head. Tune in from 0 to 300 UTC and 1100 to 1300 hours UTC to make you feel good. So treat yourself to that something special.
Feast with your ears on Music Time in Africa. Your connection to the best Pan-African music. Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, inviting you to join me every Saturday and Sunday at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
This one, yeah, yeah. This one, yeah, yeah.
Every show brings you the best music from across the continent. Old songs you know and love, and new songs to discover. You'll meet artists too. Listen to Africa's superstars and rising stars in exclusive, unplugged interviews on the radio or on my YouTube channel. Search for Heather Maxwell, Music Time in Africa. We play only the best right here on VOA Africa.
This is Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. Here's a brief recap of our top stories this hour. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry and his Saudi counterpart says efforts were underway to forge a five-day ceasefire in Yemen. And dozens of Nigerian refugees are reported to have died of starvation and dehydration after being expelled from neighboring Niger's Lake Chad area. Coming up, music from the DRC, and in our feature segment, AIDS taking its toll on the Kingdom of Lesotho. I'm Yates Wuhib, and we're live from Washington. This is Africa News Tonight on the VOA. Sports with Sunny is next. Time now for the Sunny Side of Sports with Sunny Young. Hello, Sunny.
Happy Thursday, Yahias.
Sunny, I understand you're kicking off with a sporty social media tidbit.
Yahias, I posted a photo of Lionel Messi, the Barcelona and Argentina football star, at my Sunny Side of Sports Facebook page, and you might say the photo went viral. If you want to check it out, my Facebook address is facebook.com/VOA Sunny. Messi scored two spectacular goals Wednesday and set up Brazilian star Neymar for another as Barcelona, with a late surge, overwhelmed visiting Bayern Munich 3-0 in the first leg of the UEFA Champions League final. Let's check out a few of the Facebook comments after Messi's latest magic on the pitch. Sir Joshua Zenit, writing from Nigeria, uses a bit of magical wordplay. Sir Joshua writes, "I guess Barca showed little Messi to Bayern Munich. Little Messi. Little mercy, little Messi, little mercy to Bayern Munich." Rose Akpawan, who I met last year in Abuja during my promotional and sports marketing trip to Nigeria, writes, "Hail Messi, the king of football." Samson Garkawa, also writing from Nigeria, says, "Messi is simply the best. He deserves to be the world's best until he retires." And then Samson continues, "But sometimes lack of winning a trophy in a season gives others the crown, but Messi is above everyone." Well, Messi is once again above Portuguese rival Cristiano Ronaldo when it comes to career Champions League goals. Messi now has 77 goals in the Champions League, one ahead of Ronaldo, who scored for Real Madrid Tuesday in a 2-1 loss to host Juventus in the other UEFA Champions League semifinal. Messi's Barcelona club and Ronaldo's Real are currently in a very tight race for the Spanish La Liga title, with top-of-the-table Barca 2 points ahead of Real after 35 matches played. There's now concern that the tight title race might not have a resolution this season. The Spanish Football Federation announced that all domestic football will be suspended as of May 16th in an argument over government interference in the league's television rights. The dispute centers around a law passed last week which forces the federation to sell TV rights for La Liga collectively. Currently, all La Liga clubs negotiate rights individually, a policy that hugely favors powerhouses Barcelona and Real Madrid financially. Before the announcement of the suspension, La Liga players, including Lionel Messi, had threatened to strike over the new TV deal.
Hey, g'day, mates. Remember me? This is the old sports emperor with a red-hot listening tip. That's right. Give a listen to my pal, the bright and lively Sunny Man on the sunny side of sports, right here on the Voice of America.
This is the Voice of America. Washington, Zip, D.C.
The Voice of America.
Hello, everybody. From that very first broadcast during World War II, and ever since, the Voice of America has been the voice of freedom. So on behalf of the American people and the millions around the world who draw hope and strength from your work, thank you all for being the proud and steady Voice of America.
Voice of America!
I'm Manny Pacquiao, the fighter from the Philippines.
Filipino boxing star Manny Pacquiao underwent surgery on his right shoulder Wednesday in Los Angeles following his unanimous decision loss to Floyd Mayweather. The Pac-Man's doctor was quoted as saying he could not be more pleased with the results of the operation. He says the 36-year-old Pacquiao will make a full recovery and return to the ring. Reports say the Pac-Man suffered a torn rotator cuff, the same injury suffered by Los Angeles Lakers basketball star Kobe Bryant in January. Kobe missed the remainder of the NBA regular season, and Pacquiao is expected to be sidelined at least 4 to 6 months. While he recovers, I'm sure the Filipino star will be monitoring his legal situation. Earlier this week, Pacquiao was named a defendant in a possible multi-million dollar class action lawsuit alleging he deceived the public by stepping into the ring against Mayweather as damaged goods. The Pac-Man said at the post-fight news conference that he originally suffered the shoulder injury a few weeks before the mega bout. Mayweather-Pacquiao was boxing's richest fight ever, with the bout expected to generate more than $300 million in pay-per-view sales. But it's also drawn much criticism after Mayweather's convincing victory, including why didn't Pacquiao's camp postpone the fight if he was injured beforehand? Eddie Manda, writing from Chililabambwe, Zambia, had this to say at the Sunny Side of Sports Facebook page: Pacquiao was just there for a fast buck. Shame on you, Pac-Man.
VOA.
I encourage our VOA listeners with internet access to check out the Sunny Side of Sports Facebook page. The address is facebook.com/VOA Sunny. Once again, that address, facebook.com/VOA Sunny. You'll see photos and videos, and you can post your comments. So check out the Sunny Side of Sports Facebook page.
Voice of America.
Voice of America's news, talk, and music programs are now at the tip of your fingers. Find everything at www.voaafrica.com. Listen to VOA's program lineup live, anytime, day or night. Pick out your favorite shows and listen anytime you want. Download our podcast. Check VOA Mobile from your cell phone. Subscribe to VOA Newsfeed. VOAnews.com.
They're playing basketball. We love that basketball.
One of our big basketball stories this week was Stephen Curry winning the NBA's Most Valuable Player Award. The sharp-shooting guard averaged almost 24 points a game during the regular season for the Golden State Warriors, who won a club-record 67 games, tops in the NBA. The 27-year-old Curry also broke his own NBA record by making 286 three-point shots during the regular season. The MVP award is decided by a panel of sports writers and broadcasters throughout the United States and Canada. Curry received 100 out of 130 first-place votes in winning the prize for the first time.
I'm on cloud nine.
for sure. Obviously, we're in the middle of a playoff run, and that's the most important thing. But today is a celebration for sure.
The celebration was made even more special by the presence of Steph Curry's family, including his wife, daughter, and parents. Steph thanked them all in his acceptance speech. On the court, Steph wears number 30 for the Warriors. That's the same number his father, Dell, wore during his 16-year NBA career. Steph Curry got teary-eyed talking about his father.
Just thank you so much. And Pops, you're the example of what a true professional is on and off the court. I remember a lot of your career, and to be able to follow in your footsteps, it means a lot to me.
It also meant a lot to Steph Curry to have his coach, Steve Kerr, and his Warriors teammates at the MVP awards ceremony. One of those teammates, Draymond Green, humorously referred back to 2008 NBA Most Valuable Player Kobe Bryant buying gifts for his teammates.
You know, when Kobe won MVP, they all got watches, and you keep mentioning us like, you know, we're part of this. So I was just wondering what our gift was. That's all.
That's a great question, Draymond. I warmed you guys up with the PlayStations last week. That wasn't good enough, though. I understand. That gift was to buy me some time until this announcement, and now I can up the level of the gift before we get out of here in June. So don't worry. I don't know what kind of watches they were, but I'll beat that gift.
This is Dikembe Mutombo. I am from Africa. Malaria kills thousands of children every day. Don't let your child be one of them. Make sure they sleep under a treated mosquito net. Beating malaria is like winning at basketball. You need to get to the net.
Thanks, Dikembe. And this reminder for our VOA basketball fans, Congolese giant Dikembe Mutombo will be officially enshrined in the Basketball Hall of Fame on September 11th in the eastern U.S. city of Springfield, Massachusetts. In National Basketball Association playoff action Wednesday night, the Cleveland Cavaliers and the Houston Rockets both posted victories at home to even their conference semifinal series at one game each. In the Eastern Conference semifinals, LeBron James and the Cavs defeated the Chicago Bulls 106-91. LeBron had a game-high 33 points for Cleveland. And in the Western Conference semifinals, James Harden and the Rockets beat the Los Angeles Clippers 115-109. Harden, who sports my favorite beard in basketball, fired in 32 points for the Rockets, while center Dwight Howard added 24 points and 16 rebounds. I'm VOA's Sonny Young, and that's the sunny side of sports. Back to you, Hayes Wuhee.
Thank you, Sonny. And listen to the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 16:31 UTC and 18:31 UTC. And on Friday, Sonny has an expanded half-hour edition of the sunny side of sports at 17:30 UTC right here on The Voice of America. Coming up, AIDS is taking its toll on the Kingdom of Lesotho. And next, the fourth fistula operation campaign in Zimbabwe. But first, some music. Here is Fali Ipupa from the DRC with Ndoki.
Ah, na numero moko na ebite soki na bengi na zwa ka chinois moko soki na lobi allo bonjour a zongi c'est la tanga lobi ha ha nto ko sola nini motema pasie moto dala yo bena papa lelo papa pomwani akomi tala tonto yo moto dala yo bena mama lelo mama pomwani akomi vraiment tala petite yo mama mama président big master
Fali Ipupa from the DRC with Ndoki. AIDS is taking its toll on the kingdom of Lesotho. It, combined with poverty, has led to a decline in life expectancy to drop, and many of the country's residents are becoming too sick to work. Observers say the situation is alarming and more needs to be done. Dr. Majaliwa Marwa is program specialist for HIV UNFPA in Lesotho.
Lesotho is among the countries with highest prevalence in the world. At 23%, it has the second highest prevalence in the world. And the prevalence is higher even in among women. Across all age groups, women have higher HIV prevalence than men in this country. For the last 10 years, according to the Demographic Health Survey, this situation has not changed. Women are more affected due to several reasons, one of it being an unequal power relationship, and also beside the biological factors, but women in this country are faced with gender-based violence, are also faced with unemployment, are also faced with an equal power relationship within the households. These are some of the reasons that are structural reasons that are perpetuating the prevalence among women.
That was Dr. Majaliwa Marwa of the group HIV UNFPA in Lesotho. He was speaking to reporter Leonor Mudu. In Zimbabwe, Women's and Health Alliance International, the University of Zimbabwe and Harare Hospital recently launched their fourth fistula operation campaign in the Zimbabwean capital. They are seeking to assist women living with the curable condition. An obstetric fistula is a serious internal organ injury sustained during childbirth, leaving women with urinary and other internal scars. Reporter Tatende Gombo spoke to National Coordinator for the Outreach Program with Women and Health Alliance International, Priscilla Mabendi.
The surgery has begun today. Three women have undergone surgery and we have 18 more awaiting surgery. However, the program is still open to receive new patients, so we strongly encourage anybody suffering from this condition or anybody you know who suffers from this condition to get in touch with us and we put you on the waiting list for the operation.
You just described some of the symptoms of obstetric fistula. Can you tell our listeners what types of women are there now to receive surgeries?
The main two profiles we have of the women, there's the older woman who has had a child but who's been in labor for a prolonged time, usually one day and beyond, and the labor has happened at home. By the time they get to hospital, 2 or 3 days later, it's a stillborn baby who is delivered either by cesarean or who is delivered through the actual assisted normal delivery. The other one is the young girl aged between 13 and 15 who falls pregnant and also delivers at home or goes to a clinic or health facility late to have the delivery assisted.
And can you again describe what some of the symptoms of having a fistula are?
When you have a vaginal fistula, a vesico-vaginal, it means that you are incontinent of urine. The urine continuously comes out. So we are not talking about those women who have bladder control issues who can hold their urine and then it comes out if they go to the toilet late. No, we are referring to those women with a continuous, non-stop flow of urine and it's coming out from the vaginal passage, not from the urethra. The same thing with the rectovaginal fistula. The women themselves, they have a continuous stream of feces coming out from the vaginal passage. So it is not coming out from the usual passage, which is the anus. It's coming out from the vaginal passage.
Can you let our listeners know how they can get in touch with the organization if they are or family members are interested in this week seeking assistance or surgery for their obstetric fistula?
So our numbers that you can get hold of us, we have a WhatsApp number, which is 0782-640-840. I will repeat the WhatsApp number, 0782-640-840. The other number on which you can send a call me back, a text or a message or just give a missed call, 0779-626-506. I'll repeat the number, 0779-626-506.
And we understand that you are encouraging all women throughout Zimbabwe to seek assistance. How will you help them reach to Harare if they aren't able to do so?
The procedure, you contact us or you encourage a person you know who is suffering from this condition to contact us, we will speak with them and verify whether or not it is a VVF or an RRVF, which is the fistula type. And if it is, we will pay for them to come through to Harare. So we do not encourage anybody to travel without speaking with us first so that we can assist them to travel. We also do not encourage anyone to borrow money to travel. So we really want to give the comprehensive care. Call us or text on those numbers. We will get in touch with you. We will send you money to travel when you have a date for surgery. We pay for your entire hospital stay, including your surgery costs. All you have to do is to come forward and let us know that you need help, and we will help you.
That was Priscilla Mabendi, Zimbabwe's National Coordinator for the Fistula Outreach Program. She was speaking with reporter Tetenda Gumbo. This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz. Tune in to Africa News Tonight at 16 and 18 hours UTC, Monday through Friday. And with that, we wrap up this edition of Africa News Tonight. Up next, our VOA editorial. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at www.voaafrica.com. On behalf of our Africa News Tonight producer, Bill Werkinger, and our engineer, Kurt Bynum, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Leaders in Africa and beyond have been sorely tested by an Ebola epidemic that raged through areas in West Africa over the last year and claimed more than 10,600 lives. Thanks to an unprecedented international response, the number of new infections has fallen dramatically. But the crisis isn't over. There's still much to do to bring the epidemic to an end, and even more work is needed to prevent a new outbreak. The United States has helped greatly in combating the epidemic since it was identified a year ago. In September, President Obama brought new urgency to the response with speeches and outreach at the United Nations and set an example for the international community with an expanded U.S. response by deploying U.S. troops to build treatment centers and help train health workers. The African Union has been a major partner in this endeavor. Medical personnel deployed by the AU have been critical to the response. Now, an agreement between the AU and the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, or CDC, will establish an African Center for Disease Control and Prevention. We will work together to improve all of Africa's capacity to prevent, detect, and respond to infectious disease threats. The new center's aim is to strengthen the capacities of African nations to understand disease threats, share information about them, and combat not only Ebola, but also HIV, tuberculosis, malaria, and other diseases. Operations are expected to begin later this year with the opening of a surveillance and response unit that will provide technical expertise to African health ministries and help coordinate response to health emergencies. The U.S. CDC will send two public health experts to the new African CDC to serve as technical advisors. We will also support fellowships for 10 African epidemiologists to help staff 5 regional African CDC coordinating centers that will help monitor infectious disease on the continent. We have greatly slowed Ebola's spread, and if the response is sustained, we expect to end the epidemic in a matter of months. Lessons learned here will help African nations prevent future outbreaks and deal with other diseases, too. But the U.S. needs to continue its involvement as well.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.
Hello, I'm Douglas Impuga. Join me for Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC. We'll take an in-depth look at an African news topic important to you. We'll have African journalists and expert guests share their ideas on the topic at hand. So, please plan to be with us every Thursday at 17:30 UTC, right here on The Voice of America.
The Voice of America, VOA.